We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Pitching coach Tommy Hottovee of the Cubs wearing the blue pullover.
Tommy Hottovee, pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs.
You're transitioning from being a player to kind of getting into baseball. You take an online class, was it, at Boston U? Sabermetrics 101?
Yeah. I was a finance major in college, and I had an economics minor. A lot of it was to, I'm going to refresh all my econ knowledge, and I'm going to do it in a baseball course. It's like one of the best things ever.
There's just a lot of trust there with Tommy. We know he's such a hard worker. He puts in all the hours and really, really knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching.
Tommy Hottovee, breaking down the starting rotation and bullpen on the north side with Mully and Hall.
I'm here for one reason. I want to help these guys get better, and we want to win baseball games.
Tommy Hottovee on 670 The Score. The Score.
Tommy. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are delighted to welcome in the Cubs pitching coach, Tommy Hottovee. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Morning, Tommy.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing okay. And, you know, I hate to bring it up, but it went through my head the minute I saw what happened with the Miami Marlins. Did you have any kind of flashback? I mean, you must have really reacted to that one.
Yeah, you know, Monday was an eerie day, I think, around all of baseball, around the clubhouses, around our team, just that unsettling feeling of, okay, like, here we go, you know? I think we kind of knew there was a moment like this potentially coming. I don't think any of us realized the extent or expected the extent that the Marlins had in terms of the players. And it's just an example again, you know, of how fast it can spread. You know, I think, you know, hoping all those guys get through it, you know, fine and don't have any issues. You know, that's one side of it. The other side is just how quickly it spreads and like wildfire. And, you know, for us, we feel like we're, you know, staying on top of a lot of things. We're doing the best we can to protect ourselves, you know, from the situation. But yeah, it hits home. You know, it's definitely something that we, you know, Monday was just one of those days. It's just very eerie watching that all unfold.
And Tommy, that professional approach you sort of referred to has been obvious from the Cubs, whether it's, you know, in the lineup or, in your case, the pitching staff and the pitching rotation, which has been the strength of this team through five games. 4-1 with the 180 ERA, 26 strikeouts, 5 walks. That has been something that has carried this team through the first week. If you had to, in a nutshell, describe why that's happened and how pleasant of a surprise it has been, if it was a surprise at all, how would you describe it?
You know, I think you hit it on the head, just the professionalism with how we've handled everything, you know, not just the virus, but just the getting back to baseball and these guys, the work that they put in, the time they put in, what we were focused on during that downtime has just allowed these guys to kind of hit the ground running. What's fun to see with our rotation too. I mean, look, we've got some really, amazing, you know, people, amazing players, two guys with really like elite top of the league stuff and Darvish and Chatwood, a veteran guy like John that understands how to pitch and has been in some of the biggest spots in the history of baseball. and Kyle Hendricks and Alec Mills that can go out there with what a lot of people consider less than average stuff and can carve people up and command the baseball and change speeds and do just so many different things. It's fun to watch those guys pitch and have the success. And it's credit to the work ethic, credit to the work those guys have put in and continue to work and develop. And I think it's such a, they're such a close group, that starting group, especially, that they feed off each other. They talk to each other. They talk about sequencing. They talk about the work they put in, and it's just fun to see them have success. And you know, just obviously pitching in defense is something I believe in big time. And when you have that to start, you're going to be in a good spot.
You know, and I got to tell you, as much as it's been amazing, I think we've been surprised a little bit, not because the guys aren't living up to their potential, but because we didn't expect it to happen with pretty much everyone, right? Kyle Hendricks going the distance in his first outing. That's extraordinary. And being the NL player of the week as a result of that, because no one else could do it. And you go through the whole group. I mean, you could say Darvish's start was kind of the roughest one. And, you know, I think a lot of people weren't expecting what they saw from Tyler Chatwood and the amount of work that he had put in and Alec Mills. And it was just a very satisfying sequence of starting that I'm just curious, did it catch you at all by surprise? Normally, something will go wrong, and it really didn't happen for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, you guys didn't expect Hendricks to go complete game shutout game one. I mean, you know, come on. So, this is why, you know, why I talk a lot about this time buildup in terms of pitch counts and not innings. Obviously, we want to get guys the up and downs and have them feel what it's like to get up and down that many times. But it's really about the pitch count and managing that workload. Now, if we're efficient, like you see even with, like, you know, Alec Mills the other day and John, if you're efficient, then you can go deep into games. And then we just keep communicating on how you're feeling, how your legs are feeling from all the sitting down and getting back up. That's the key. But the pitch count is what we've kind of focused on earlier. And it shows you in this game how efficient you can be. And if you are efficient and you are attacking the strike zone and getting weak contact, you can go deep into games. You know, this game, there's so much of it is tied to swing and miss and home runs and strikeouts and the walks. And you know what, like, just being able to see guys go out and pitch deep in the game, getting weak contact, still, you know, your strikeouts are going to be there, you know, when you get to strikes, but being able to elicit that weak contact early in count, that's what allows you to pitch in this game.
Tommy, obviously not all the news has been good with your pitching staff. The starters have been great. The bullpen has been shaky at times. Let's start with Craig Kimbrell. His outing the other night was as rough as it gets, and I think as much as he's lacked command as a Cub, what do you think went wrong, and how do you address it if a guy in your position?
You know, I think the number one thing for Craig, you know, the other night was just the fact we didn't get him any work, you know, for 6 days, basically, from that last exhibition game with the White Sox. And, you know, it's hard when you have a closer and you're early in the season, especially and any normal season, but you especially have it now. We want to get him consistent work, but we also don't want to burn him, you know, for 2 or 3 days just because we need him to pitch in the game. So we're constantly trying to strike that balance. And, you know, trying to get him the work he needs. It, no matter what anybody says, you know, an exhibition game, a bullpen, they're not the same. And, you know, when you put yourself in a safe situation in a big spot for your team. You know, now with that being said, I know Craig, he's not going to make any excuses for how he performed and how that game went. You know, the one thing I've talked to him about, all the work he's putting in, the things we're focused on mechanically, the things we're focused on with his pitches, they're, you know, stuff-wise, trending in the right direction. Now, one thing as a pitcher, and I've been there, when you feel like your stuff is ticking up, you're obviously going to get more confidence to be able to attack the strike zone and do things you want to do with the baseball. So, you know, I think as we keep going, we keep putting him in those situations, keep working on the things that we want to stay focused on and get him back to being himself and just attacking and coming at hitters, especially, you know, early in the count. Now, I do give the Reds a little bit of credit for what they did with their approach. you know, he got ahead of a couple guys pretty quick. And then they, it was almost like what I call like auto taking, right? Auto take with a two strikes, see if he can get him back in the strike zone. So, yeah, that's something we'll watch, something we'll monitor. That's an approach the teams are going to take with him, and we'll try to take advantage of it, you know, in the next outing.
When you talk about a guy like that, you know, you always wonder if other things come into play. And by that, I mean, you know, contract status or the plan that management has for him. Really, maybe a better way of saying it is the back of the baseball card, a guy that has done it before, and you know that that there is the, you know, if he's done it, he can do it again, versus the urgency of kind of a 60-game season. Does it mean you have to have a shorter leash than you normally would with a guy with the back of the baseball card?
You know, I think right now we have a short leash on everybody just because of where we are in the season and guys not having enough time to really get stretched out, get enough outings in. So that's something we have to monitor with everyone. The other part of that, too, is, you know, our bullpen is a unique mix of pitchers out there. We've got some veteran guys that have kind of pitched into some big spots, and Jeffress and Capera and what Roe Wick did for us last year, and how Kyle Ryan continues to go in and get out. You know, there's also a lot of young guys out there too. And so, you know, we're confident in the group we have out there. Absolutely. We want those guys, you know, we've been with them for this whole summer camp and the quarantine and just the work they put in. And even you hear like guys like Schwarber kind of praise some of the work those guys did, what they had to do facing them coming back. But again, part of this time, and we have 10 days left here to kind of evaluate the last, you know, evaluate that group and make sure that we have guys that step up and continue to develop and continue to get big outs for us, because we know the rosters are gonna shrink, you know, in about 10 days. So guys are going to continue to be put in situations that maybe they're not, either haven't been in before or maybe not comfortable, because we need to see what we can get out of these guys in this 10-day window before we have to make a decision. And with that being said, too, you know, Craig, we're going to continue to put him in the best situations we think possible. And if he hasn't thrown in a while, like, we need to get him in the game to get his work in, because you see just, you know, how different it is for the relievers. The starters, even if the starters get three starts during that summer camp, they're building up innings, and innings matter, because you can have one bad inning in a summer camp as a starter and then go back out and be able to fix it. When you're a reliever, when you only have four outings or five outings, you know, it's a really short window to get all the things we work, you know, cleaned up and worked on that we need to. So I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing in the conversations we're having with those guys. We trust that all those guys we put into situations are going to come in and compete for our team and have good results. So we just got to continue on that path and see we have some guys step up out there.
Tommy, before we let you go, I wanted to get your impression of what Tom Brenneman said from the Reds broadcast booth last night. And Tom has not been one necessarily known to compliment the Cubs, but he did. And he talked about the quote. He said, "You've got to give it up to a team that's showing this kind of fire and passion and enthusiasm that they are showing. There's a lot of guys down there making tens of millions of dollars a year, and they're coming to the ballpark like they are playing for a high school team." And that's the end of the quote. Tommy, it's noticeable watching the Cubs, and I'm not sure if it's because there's no fans in the stands, or obviously you guys are winning, but how would you describe the difference in the dugout this year than it was a year ago? Because that fire and passion and enthusiasm that Brenneman referenced is pretty obvious to the viewer.
I love the description of it feeling like a high school team. I think he couldn't have hit it more on the head. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I loved playing three sports in high school. Football, I loved it because it's Friday Night Lights and you're in front of a bunch of fans. Basketball, you're in the gym and the fans are all around you. In high school, from where I grew up, it was a 4 o'clock game, you know, right after school. There was nobody there. So you had to find ways to keep you entertained, to keep your spirits up, to have fun, to, you know, be enthusiastic for your group. And it's just a weird feeling not having fans in the stands, and you can pump in crowd noise and you can do all the things to kind of give it the ambiance. But there are players that feed off of that, you know, feed off of the the fan interaction, what the fans bring to the table, even good and bad. When you go on the road and you get booed, some guys, you know, they start to perform better. So, you know, we're just trying to have fun. We're happy that we get to play this game. We're excited that we get to come to the ballpark every day and get a chance to compete and to win. And we're going to have fun doing it. You know, if we're going to do this and we're going to make a run at this thing, we're not going to, go through the motions. We're going to go, we're going to have fun, we're going to compete, we trust each other, believe in each other, and you know, usually when you do that, good things happen.
Great stuff, Tommy. Really appreciate your time. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Tommy. Good
All
stuff.
All right, guys. Thanks.
That's Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach. Just, you know, they have really started strong. I don't think you can feel bad about it at all. And, you know, that starting pitching has bought them more time. And the bullpen can – it hasn't been spectacular, but it does buy you time. You get through a week. You get closer to improving. You're doing all your stuff. It's really – it's a wonderful kind of formula they got going.
Are they already – are they finally over the World Series hangover? Is that what we're seeing here?
Stabilizing force, Molly. I think that's what you're getting at. The starting rotation has definitely provided the stability that they had hoped. And they've gotten quality starts. I mean, Darvish is the exception, but he was the guy you expected to come in, you know, and you don't worry about him as much. But, yeah, five starts, five pretty impressive performances.
And to answer Kevin's question, you know, without Joe there to pull Kyle Hendricks out, yeah, he got a complete game. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Did you see that coming?
He's going to have a nice evening in Philadelphia.
No, I did not see that one coming.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen in that downtime, right? And we were, you know, excited going into the season and how our starters were looking. But that downtime's tough. And like we've talked about, everybody has come back from that differently. And to a man, that starting staff has looked really good and continues to first time through is really, really a nice, nice thing to watch.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Yeah, that downtime is very important, how you handle your downtime. And I got to tell you, David, there is a story out there. And again, you know, we don't have full confirmation of it, but I think we both know Bob Nightingale pretty well. And it was certainly interesting to hear that Bob went on the radio in Pittsburgh, talked to a station there, 93.7 The Fan, and said that he heard that the Marlins outbreak started because Marlins players left their hotel to go out and have a good time in Atlanta. And obviously we have seen 17 members of their traveling party that have now tested positive for COVID-19, and that is just a startling number, a hugely disappointing number for Major League Baseball and for the restart. And you can't help but wonder, as you look at this, if other teams have been obviously more careful about what they're doing. And, you know, am I going too far by thinking that the Cubs may have been more careful about the way they're operating than most because, in part, of what they witnessed with Tommy Hotovy?
Well, that's a really interesting connection, and I don't want to I think that you sit there and you say that and you want to process it and think before you say anything else. Look, I think a couple things. What Tommy Hotovy did in sharing his story publicly and then privately going even a step further, and these are guys that he worked with last year and became close with, and I think everyone hears when we have Tommy on just how likable of a guy he is. When he shared what he endured, I just think that's going to have a powerful impact on an individual no matter what stage of your athletic career you're at as a professional. So I think that, yes, obviously that you can't ignore that as a possibility to why the Cubs were maybe shocked into, you know, being disciplined and avoiding the path that may lead them to, and you know, the COVID and going through what they saw Tommy Hotovy firsthand went through. The other part of that, too, I think is complimentary to is this is an experienced team. And we talk all the time about, well, who's going to have the benefit in a short season, a young team like the White Sox, an upstart, or a team like the Cubs who are experienced and veterans. I think in the case that you in the example that you referenced, and I think it is a really smart link and leap to make, yeah, that experience matters. Mully, these aren't guys who came to Chicago and came back to play baseball for any other reason but to finish what they started, to take care of themselves, to respect their teammates by not spreading the virus and doing everything and taking every precaution. It takes maturity to be able to do the things necessary to, as an individual, do all that you can to try to prevent this spread. And I think the Cubs collectively did everything they could, and I think the results are seen in the numbers. And I think the results are seen in the fact that they took a professional approach to the season, and maybe it started the day that Tommy Hottovy shared everything with him.
Yeah, I mean, he was, by all accounts, you know, going through Zoom calls with players, talking to guys about what he was experiencing. And there is a seriousness to this that the Cubs seem to understand better than some other teams. And I don't want to... You know, I don't want to exaggerate what that is, because I think it's important enough to just mention that as a fact. But I would, I've got to believe that if you, you know, witness this, and Tommy, when he talked to us about it, and when he talked publicly about it, he talked about, you know, the idea that it crushed him, that what he went through was kind of this extraordinary, this horrific event that, you know, he'd never experienced anything like it. And I think when you witness that, you feel different. When it's someone you know, and when it hits home in that fashion, it is a completely different way of looking at things.
And in the context of the Marlins outbreak and kind of the way we're talking about this, the most frightening aspect of what Tommy Hottovy's story revealed, as much as, yeah, the physical toll it took and everything, you just have total sympathy. But I think the scary part, and probably maybe the thing that resonated as much as anything, was the fact that he did everything right.
Yeah.
He avoided every, you know, potential interaction to try to keep himself from getting it, and he got it anyway. So I think that almost like scared the Cubs into thinking, well, geez, I have to do whatever it is to protect myself from maybe getting this virus. And I think that was care that you just didn't see, if these stories are correct, the Marlins take in Atlanta, in a different city, as they traveled. Everybody in baseball was talking about the problems are going to come up when teams start to travel. The Marlins, if this is true, missed the memo. And that was irresponsible, immature. And if it is true, they deserve all the criticism they will receive, because baseball, the numbers show, since Friday, the majority of the league, the rest of the league, is doing everything right. If they didn't, and they're paying a price for it, and everyone's paying a price for it, shame on them.
Yeah, and again, it is, you know, not a substantiated report at this time, but I think that, you know, they're letting down the entire industry if that's the case. And, you know, Kevin was talking about what a bad organization they are earlier when we did the 5 at 5. I got to tell you, that's the takeaway too. This idea that if it was a team not being serious in the midst of this, then you know, shame on them. It's just an absolute travesty, without a doubt.
More will come out. I mean, Bob Nightingale is a pro. I think if he throws it out there on a radio station, I don't think, as we know, Mully, you're not going to address something unless you have some feeling that, you know, you can substantiate it. I'm curious to see where the reporting takes us in this story, because not only from a journalistic standpoint do you have maybe an obligation to follow up, but I think Major League Baseball, now that there's, you know, an awareness or a public awareness, they need to look into this, because they need to make clear, and if there are penalties that need to be, you know, handed out because of this, then they should do that as well, because this is, you know, this was the glitch that everybody feared and the direction nobody wanted to go. And yet here we are, worried about what the Marlins outbreak means to the 60-game season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm so happy that there is no residual effect on any of the other teams involved. You know, it was so worrisome that something could shut down the season, right? I mean, that had to be maybe one of the great fears and takeaways of this thing, the idea that, oh, my God, you know, they're going to have to actually cancel the season. I'm sure that went through a lot of people's heads. And I don't know where this is at. It seems as if they may be willing to go ahead and rely on some kind of a win a percentage as opposed to a total to figure things out. If indeed it comes down to that, it seems like they are hell bent on trying to get their season in, and you'd hope that everyone would be as serious about it as possible. If indeed this was a situation where a team wasn't serious about it, that would really be disappointing.
Yeah, I think they're going to do what they need to do to adjust the schedule, but I don't think there's anything that says every team has to play 60 games. It will. They're going to try to make some up with doubleheaders. Everybody's going to have to stay flexible. I think they're, you know, would it affect the integrity of the season if the Marlins, for instance, had to, you know, miss more than just the games through this week? And they're playing, you know, 45 games. What does that do? What does that do to the other teams on the schedule? Those are questions that I think we can't answer right now. And I think, you know, nobody is also, we need to be clear. We're not just saying that because the Marlins stepped out of line and boy, now we can assign this to one incident that everyone can say, all right, all's well. That's not the case. It's going to be a tenuous situation. Major League Baseball can celebrate the fact that 6,400 tests have been conducted since last Friday, and only the Marlins were the one team that had positive cases. But that doesn't mean there won't have more things to worry about. There might not be more positive cases moving forward. We just have to take day by day.
All righty, we're going to bring in Mike Sando next. We're going to talk about this multi-tier. It's a yearly thing, an annual thing that he does, where he separates the quarterbacks into different tiers by talking to 50 people around the league, coaches, coordinators, personnel people, and boy, the Bears didn't fare well. Not a huge surprise. We'll bring Mike Sando in next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
We know, okay, that we're the best quarterback room in the National Football League.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That is a John DeFilippo again, taken out of context, but amusing nonetheless. And we're delighted to welcome in Mike Sando, doing great work now with The Athletic. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Mike.
You got me laughing with that. You're like, hey, this is out of context. I don't care. It's too good. Where was he said that? I mean,
He was on a Zoom call, and he was basically saying that you have to have that feeling that you're the best quarterback room in the NFL. Something along
the swagger.
Those lines. Swagger. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, well, with the quarterback tiers in the books for 2020, I do have the class of 2017's year-by-year progress on the screen here. So if we want to, we can investigate that, I suppose.
Well, I think it's funny to kind of look at what you wrote. I mean, first of all, great work, great research, and always a great read. My great work as always. But from a Bears perspective, from a Chicago perspective, I think we look at that and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine. Maybe the only takeaway when you see one guy at 26th, albeit in the third tier, and the other guy at 32nd, you say to yourself, well, it doesn't really matter which one of them plays, right? Maybe we're getting too worked up about a quarterback competition where it's still going to be kind of bottom of the table.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you be realistic, but you also know that, you know, they have been a playoff team with Trubisky when he was a rookie. So if there's any way you can recreate that, you know that Foles has been a good relief pitcher, right? When he's been in bad situations, it's been horrible, whether it was the Rams, whether it was Jacksonville. So if there's a way to take one last look at Mitch Trubisky and then have Foles as your relief pitcher, not somebody you're going to sign and have for a 5-year career as your starter, but you know, who knows? I mean, it doesn't have to be horrific. And I know that that's not a great – reminds me when I was in college, I had a roommate who told me with a straight face he was shooting for a high F on a test the next day, and he wasn't trying to be funny. It was, you know, we're not going for that, but they've at least had a, you know, a winning record before with Trubisky. So maybe they can cobble something together and you know, be better than people think, even if they don't have a great quarterback.
Mike, and all the people that you spoke to, obviously you look at Mitch, and I think the truth is somewhere in between. I'm not sure he's as bad as sometimes we locally accuse him of being, and I don't know he is as good as being worth where they drafted him and gave up to get him. But I wonder if you feel like there's a sense out there that he can improve, or is this where he is doomed to kind of settle in the 30s range and as a backup perhaps and as a spot starter? Or is there a feeling, did you talk to anybody that sees him as a starter of a playoff team?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest concern, is there hasn't been that progression that you'd like to see just naturally from getting better and the light bulb coming on, and you could hopefully be able to see progress year over year, or someone who's becoming a much quicker decision maker, or just some aspect of the game that is advancing. And I think that's the biggest concern, is that there doesn't seem to be, you know. And so now you have, for Mitch Trubisky, he's been in a similar spot, you know, more than once in this poll. I think he was 25th in 2019, and he's been 31, 32 the other 2 years. That's not, you know, there hasn't been that spike, right? And so that's concerning, I think, for everybody.
Well, yeah. You know, and I think that part of the problem in Chicago anyway is that not only did they draft Mitch, they traded up to do it, and not only did they trade up to draft Mitch, they did it over a couple of other players that, you know, one guy's the best quarterback in football by all accounts, and the other guy is another highly thought of player in Deshaun Watson. So when you pass on Mahomes and Watson, whether Mitch makes the pick or not, those are the comparisons, and when you come up as short as you do in those comparisons, and they don't pick up the last year of your contract, and they do bring in a guy like Foles, the thinking is that you know, you didn't live up to your draft status, and it's more a Ryan Pace problem, but it's a problem.
It is. The thing about it is every organization, every general manager, you're in this thing long enough, that this happens. No one's figured out. I always joke, head coach and quarterback are the two most important things. No one knows how to hire either one, right? You know, but you're 100% right. You've got Mitch Trubisky now in this cauldron of Chicago, where there's almost no place in the league where it's more passionate, where it's more scrutinized, where it's more talked about 24/7. And then you wake up and you read tier one this year. Watson passed Tom Brady this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Watson's in the top tier, and Mahomes is unanimous top tier. Mahomes is buying Lamborghinis or Ferraris or whatever it was yesterday and getting a share of the baseball team. You know, and Watson is perceived as carrying it in spite of incompetence in the front office and, you know, no good offensive line. Those two guys are in tier one. You know, tier one's been Brady, Rodgers, Breeze. They're in that. So it is hard to overcome, even if no one's figured out how to bat 1,000 drafting quarterbacks. Nobody. It's, you know, it's hard.
And, Mike, your first tier, I think, was predictable. Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Rodgers, Breeze. And then Deshaun Watson sneaking in there, I guess, was a bit of a surprise. But were you surprised that Tom Brady slipped into tier two? And also Lamar Jackson, that was where he landed at number seven.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you would have told me in May, you know, or whenever before I'd really started, that Watson would be in tier one and Brady would be in tier two, I would have paused, you know, I would have put my hand on my chin, I would have kind of looked up and said, oh, I can see that. But you would almost think that people would give Brady more of the benefit of the doubt for a year, right? I mean, you know, they didn't have good weapons around them. But in the end, I thought, this is pretty cool that, you know, people are really thinking about this. They're not just punching the ballot with Brady, you know. And I had great conversations with so many of these people, and 22 of them still put Brady in the top tier, but 28 put Watson there, and he made it. As far as Lamar Jackson, everybody agrees on what Lamar Jackson is. I mean, he's a tier one football player, maybe the best in the league, and yet when we put together the quarterback tiers to make it into that top tier, there is an emphasis on your ability to handle the pure pass situations, and that's Tom Brady being down 28-3 in the Super Bowl. We can't do an amazing running game. We can't do play action. We can't have all those components that, they have used to make help Lamar Jackson just be unleashed as a force unlike anything we've ever seen. Mahomes last season trailed by double figures six times. They went 5-1. You know, it's like impossible to do. So I think at a certain point, if Lamar Jackson keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to be in the top tier through sheer force of will. But so far, they've lost a couple playoff games. He hasn't been able to throw them to victory in some of those. And so we'll see. I mean, he's clearly dedicated to his craft, improving. I would expect he would improve in that area as well. And, maybe he gets there next year.
One of the guys that surprised me was Matthew Stafford. The amount of support that he got, even five votes for tier one and 38 put him in tier two. And the first paragraph says it all. You're right. Stafford has played 11 seasons, owns no playoff victories, and is coming off a broken back at age 30.
I really like to set a guy up, you know? but, yeah, I mean, I wrote that because that's what you're thinking sort of from afar, right? I mean, we're like, dude, I mean, he hasn't done anything. But I was really sort of heartened by people actually watched his eight games last year, and they really – obviously, he's had the skill set to be number one. I don't think anyone's ever disputed that. So that makes me think, even though he hasn't – he's been in that range before. He's been a two the whole way. I thought it was a different kind of optimistic two, like he had ascended in that scheme. So we'll see. But he did play really well last year when he was on the field.
Mike, Dak Prescott moves up from 17 to 12. I thought that was a big leap. I know there's a lot expected from him. I know he's getting paid a ton of money. I just still wonder, in the back of my mind, is he a product of the people around him, or is he a guy that makes everybody around him better?
Yeah, no doubt. I did a study a few weeks ago where I took the last 4 years, which encompasses his career, and I just said, hey, how many of the starts have you gotten on offense, not counting quarterback, but the other positions? How many starts did you get from guys who were voted to the Pro Bowl, not named as a replacement? I think you and I were named once as replacements, but voted in, right? And the Cowboys were like number two behind Pittsburgh with a third of their starts on offense came from Pro Bowlers. We've seen those guys. So clearly that's a component of it. And then he hasn't had the postseason success despite that. So I get it, but I do feel like he's a two as opposed to a three. I think you could make a case that, you know, even though he's one spot behind Carson Wentz in this thing, that he's had a better career than Wentz to this point, staying on the field, and he's been at least as productive when on the field. So I like where he's at in the second tier. I think he's good, but we'll all be watching because when you pay that guy, the rest of the stuff falls back to the pack. Russell Wilson doesn't have the top defense anymore, and he's had to prove that he can still be the reason they get in, and that's why the last 2 years he's been tier one. Can Dak do that? I don't know.
Mike, thanks a ton. We really appreciate your time. We should let people know they can go on and vote, right? You guys are also running a poll, so the story is there. You got to go to The Athletic and read it, and you can take a poll. I'd be very curious to see how the public responds to what the professionals think, and if there is a great disparity of opinion.
Yes, if Mitch Trubisky's in second tier, you can call me back. We'll talk about that.
Great stuff,
Mike.
Mike.
Thanks a ton, Mike.
That we're the best quarterback room in the National Football League.
There it is again.
Thanks a lot.
See you, Mike.
So bad. Come on. All right, we'll see you.
That is Mike Sando from The Athletic. That's hysterical. Wow, a lot of fun today, David.
Yep.
A lot going on. Big game tonight for the White Sox. Seems like
big one.
Statement game, must win. I don't know. All of Dustin's imperatives must be used.
Well, we got to come in here tomorrow talking about what Lucas Giolito did to right the ship, hopefully. And with the Cubs, they just want to keep things rolling because they are in a good place, and they're back in Cincinnati for another one.
And we want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, means a ton. Thanks to our executive producer, Dustin Rhodes.
Why don't I have a high approval rating?
And, of course, much thanks to Kevin Zipak.
Nobody likes me.
And Ray. God, Ray, I get emotional thinking about how
thanks,
much
Ray.
You do.
It can only be my personality, that's all.
David, have a glorious day for yourself.
Have a great day, Mully.
All right, pal. We'll talk later. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And that segment brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.